When the answers are 0% financing, a test drive brought to you, and hundreds of makes and models in stock, the only question is, what are you waiting for, you jagoff?
Exactly. Rorick Honda is back in business with their parts and service department, and one of their trusted sales representatives are available to assist you all online for that perfect new or used vehicle. Just visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs.
And now let's start the Jagoff podcast from 24 Pearl Avenue, where everybody loves us.
Oh, God.
According to the Oxford Dictionary, the word jagoff is defined as a noun, which means a stupid, irritating, or...
Here's how Pittsburghers define a word jagoff. When someone cuts you off on a parkway. Jagoff!
Or someone scares the out of you.
Yeah, jagoff!
Or it's a term of endearment.
How you been, jagoff?
This is Mark Madden.
Hi, this is Larry Richard.
This is Ken Wild Bill.
Hey, this is Kurt Angle.
Hi, this is Rocky Blyer.
Hey, it's Rick Seaback.
Hi, this is Greg Brown.
Hi, I'm Tyler Kennedy.
This is Antonio Holmes.
And this is the Jagoff Podcast.
Two things of business here. One, go to iTunes, find us, and please make a comment, give us a rating.
Yeah,
we would appreciate
it. We have a bunch of ratings.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Right?
All pretty high, right?
Yep. Okay. So we would appreciate you doing that. And the second thing is that if you want the podcast earlier than everybody else in the week, make sure you subscribe to it on radio.com app.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so this is where we say, what was on the blog? Well, it was our final week of our hashtag BYOP Yajagoff. BYOP was build your own
podcast. And so our results were audited by Deloitte and Touche and Roman Rennebeck.
RR. Yeah, he did an amazing job, my sonny boy.
And we voted. And it really was crazy that Eaton Park and Primanti's were neck and neck.
They really
were. Even some late night votes. But it turned out to be just like the word, the game Clue, right? It's a podcast with Frizzy at Eaton Park with Mr. Rogers' cardigan sweater.
Yeah. I mean, if that doesn't sound like a good podcast, I don't know what is. Because let's be honest, right? We weren't really putting it out there that it was going to become a podcast because we were afraid. Mm-hmm. What if the most beloved Pittsburgh person ended up being like Hines Ward?
Mm-hmm.
How would we have access to him at this point? We
right.
probably wouldn't. But the beauty of it is it came down to some of our faves. And some of our faves were really like sharing it. Like David and Heather shared it. Johnny Angel shared it. Frizzy shared it. Eaton Park and Permanis. And we were just so overwhelmed with people being excited about it. So thanks for voting and thanks to the folks who shared it.
And we are actually going to try to execute that podcast. As you're listening to this podcast, we are probably in a high-level meeting trying to talk about that.
Yeah, very high level.
So we're back to posting jagoffs on the podcast or on the blog. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, look at yesterday's. If you're listening to this on Monday, look at yourjagoff.com for the underwear man. That's all I'm just going to say.
Oh, wow.
The underwear
man.
Look
at you, so ahead of schedule. But we're excited because today is our finally, we've been wanting to do a hockey 6 degree of separation kind of podcast, and it was perfect. Should I go into the explanation?
Do it.
So here's how it goes, guys. Basically, Rachel is a hockey mom and knows John. John loves hockey and reads a lot of Josh Yohe from The Athletic. And he recently completed a story about former Penguin Ken Reggett, who is partnered with Dr. Mark Barrett's. I'm sure you've heard us talk that name before because he is the founder of Double Play. The Jagoffs completed the 7th Jagoff Live brought to you by Project Double Play, which featured who?
Napalm.
Napalm.
This is just the beginning. Rach.
John.
Hockey-related podcast. It doesn't get any better. How did you describe this podcast? Why is it this way?
It's 6 degrees of jagoff and sort of hockey, right?
Yeah.
Because you and I know you. I'm a hockey mom. You're a hockey guy. You have an interest in The Athletic, and specifically Josh Yohe, who interviewed Phil Bork, one of your faves. And also one of your faves is somebody who you met at the restaurant, 31 Sport, right? Bar
right.
and Grill.
Mm-hmm.
How long ago? Ken Reggett.
Right.
Who has partnered with Dr. Barrett's for the Double Play. And the Double Play is the reason that we're still doing our live shows with Napalm.
Boom.
Boom. That's all
Who's
of our guests.
Music? Yeah, that's crazy. See that? Ken and
I'm
Dr. Barrett's. What do you think about all that? Are your heads spinning?
Are your heads spinning?
Are you good?
Did you get that?
Are you good at this point?
I think my head just exploded.
It
but
did.
It was so cool. It was a good explosion.
It's a 6 degree, Dr. Barrett, so it's a good one. Uh-huh. Listen, we are so happy to have you both at the same time because we love the fact that there is obviously a sport element to this because nothing says Pittsburgh without a sports element. But we also want to talk about the whole thing centering around double play. So tell us about how the two of you connected and what double play is, and feel free to go bounce off of each other.
It's a little weird, right, Ken?
It certainly is, Doc.
so I'll start. So I take care of gymnasts as part of my work as an orthopedic surgeon. And Nicole Baker, who's a partner with Ken, has a daughter who is a wonderful gymnast. Caitlin, she just won a big prize from Bowling Green as one of their standout gymnasts.
Okay.
And as a result of that, came to 31 Bar, got to hang out with Ken one evening, and immediately thought this is one of the cooler people that I've met. And we have been friends since that time. And so when I knew that things were going to get rough for people and for restaurants, I reached out to him and he said, this is what we're all about. We are about helping the community. We're about putting together some good meals. Tell me how I can help.
I love that. And that's Pittsburgh, right?
It is.
It is.
Keep it simple and how can I help?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And Ken, let's do this parlay into this little playoff thing. You're the goalie. You're the best. You're the last thing to stop everything and help everything. You're the last safety net in hockey. And here you are. You're the safety net for Dr. Barrett's. Is one of
that was good.
How about that, Rachel? That's kind of Rachel like.
Yeah.
So when Dr. Barrett's comes and says, "Okay, we're going to do these meals," you're thinking this is awesome, or do you have to think about how this is all going on? You jump right
no,
in.
No, that, yeah. Well, thanks for having us all both on, and especially ourselves, myself with the hockey and with Dr. Barrett's. Dr. Barrett's, and he's a very humble person. I got to say that right from the get-go. He's got a heart of gold. And Mark came up to me and Nicole, and he mentioned that this is what he wanted to do, and he kind of explained what was going on. We knew with the COVID and all that, you know, this was originally when it first happened, and we didn't quite know what all was happening, how it was being spread.
Sure.
And Doc said, you know, Ken, this is real. You know, we got to be careful. And he took consideration with the double play, working with our local small businesses and restaurants in particular, and helping us out and helping us help people that need meals. And this Mark came up to us and asked us to help out, and in return we're helping out the community and trying to get our employees back in on the payroll and get them working again and off the system. We're putting meals in on people's tables, as well as working with the first responders in Collier, our community, and fire department, through other businesses that help donate money through Casa San Jose. So it's grown into a wonderful thing, and we'd like to keep picking that up and go on past this point once we do get opened up, because there are people in need. And when you look at us hockey players, we appreciate everything we had and when we're playing and the community supporting and surrounding us. And now I'm part of the community and this is my home too. And we want to give back to the community like they embraced us. We want to, in return, embrace them, and we're able to do this, even if it's a small bit of a way, with a double play, helping local businesses and helping people in need, and Dr. Bear. So it's just a wonderful opportunity, and I'm very grateful to have that opportunity to work with Dr. Barrett.
Dr. Barrett's really a kind of a personal question here, in that, you know, you're obviously needing funds, you know, for the double play. But the personal question I have for you is, did you select Ken Riggis 31 Sports Bar and Grill because of his awesome honey jalapeno wings?
Yeah. it made it so easy, right?
They are good.
They are. Listen, you don't know this yet, but the Rennebeck kids, they are wing specialists, and we need to get them to 31 Sports Bar and Grill to taste the honey jalapeno wings, because they will be highly ranked in the Rennebeck family.
Yeah, we're in the north, and anytime we come over that way in near Bridgeville, John says, that's the place I tell you about. So I have to make my way there. But, you know, back to the whole double play, though, it is really the 6 degrees of separation, because I think Dr. Barrett's, I mean, I'm speaking for you, but my assumption is, you know, kind of like what Ken said, you saw it coming, you didn't quite know what was happening yet, but that quickly you realized this isn't going away. And what was a double play, which was basically setting up restaurants to continue to thrive and then in turn help the community, really turned into multiple facets, as Ken said, because you are within the community now. You're also, you know, having others like musicians and people in the community to help, you know, spread the word. And on top of that, you're feeding those like the first responders. There's layers and layers to this as it's growing. I think it's just so organic. And again, it does speak volumes of Pittsburgh. But what was the most, you know, surprising thing to you, Dr. Barrett, that came out of this? Or the most fascinating that you thought, wow, this came as an idea, but this is what it's become?
Well, it wasn't surprising to me that Pittsburgh was going to rally, because it's just that kind of place. I moved here in 1980 and expected to be here for 4 years of medical school. And at every key moment in my life, I said, this is just going to be a great place to work. This is going to be a great place to raise a family. It's going to be a great place to live. So I've been here a long time, even though I'm not a native. I wasn't surprised by what Pittsburghers would do. What was, I think one of the coolest things for me was connecting with people that I would not have otherwise met.
Oh, yeah.
And so, this organization, Casa San Jose, was introduced to them. They've been just amazing. It's, an organization that serves the Latinx community within Pittsburgh, but they've said, listen, we'll help you help anyone. And so they're an amazing organization. 412 Food Rescue with Leah Lizarondo and her crew have just said, yeah, whatever is needed, we're going to make happen. And so it is fun to see it come to fruition, but it's also fun to meet the people who do this every day. What I've learned more than anything else, Rachel and John, is that if you don't support your churches, your synagogues, your mosques, and these charitable organizations during good times, they're not there when you really need them. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing flipped in 48 hours. Wow. I had an idea about this, and I connected with a couple of these organizations. They go, oh, yeah, this is what we do. Wow. We're going to have to work overtime because we're already working hard, but this is what we do.
Amazing.
And Ken, talk about the effect it had on your restaurant, maybe morale, right? Because obviously the little bit of the food that's being taken care of, it's helping, but it's obviously not, you know, saving your restaurant, but it is saving your work in the community. It's keeping the morale up for the people that can work. Would that be true?
That would absolutely be true. And in fact, it kept, you know, my morale up, because I couldn't really make sense of the whole thing that was going on. We kind of knew, we heard, and there were so many question marks out there. I had a heart attack, not this past January, but the January before. So I'm very susceptible at my age, 56. So, and Doc, you said, Ken, you got to get off that line. You know, you're susceptible in that. So I was having a hard time justifying keeping open type of thing, but Once Mark came to me and was mentioning what he would like to do with Casa San Jose and a double play to get the economy going, it's much like the stimulus package. It started to make sense for me where we can help the community, because, like I said, they were always there, you know, for me when I was playing back in the days, and that, you know, that was a while ago, but still it meant a lot, and so much so I called this home. My daughter's born here, my kids have grown up here. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to make sense of what was almost a surreal situation. And we're able to do it. And from the donations that came in, we probably somewhere between 500 and 1,000 meals were able to drop off with cats in San Jose through donations with Mark and the community. Troy Loney was another great one with another Penguin alumni. And it made sense keeping all this together and keeping the lights on and helping other people, because in times of need, that's what we all need. We all need our neighbors and we all need our friends to stand with us, because a lot of people are in this, you know, it's, and like they always say, it's not any fault of their own. It's something we were all brought into. And like the stimulus packages for small businesses is to get the employees back working again, kickstart the economy, and getting them off the drain of unemployment and being a part of things. And this is what Dr. Barris was able to do for us ahead of time, was get this started right away and maybe pay an electric bill or something that helped get this going, and gave us great hope, great inspiration to move forward in a time when we all need some, you know, people to step forward.
No doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it.
And that's such a great comparison to the stimulus, because it's so true. Small businesses need that, you know, those layerings, and this is the perfect opportunity.
Now, Ken, we're not going to let you get away with just being a nice guy talking, oh, Dr. Barrett's, and, you know, we're not.
Wow.
Listen, we have
proof?
We have Josh Yohe talking about with Phil Bork about the Penguin, the book behind the walls coming up here after you. This is your chance to just put something out on the table that, you know, look, if Josh is going to tell a story about Ken Riggott, it might be this one. What's your favorite Penguin story from those days?
What's my favorite Penguin story from those days? Boy, I tell you, that was something else. Coming here from Philadelphia into Pittsburgh, across the state, and I got in my car and I drove across, and what a beautiful drive that was. Well, coming into Pittsburgh at 10 o'clock at night.
I'm sure.
But I think Pittsburgh is one of the most beautiful cities.
Me too.
When I first came in, up in the airport and down the parkway, I guess, and through the Fort Pitt Bridge and all the lights of the city you're on, that was my first introduction. I think I fell in love right there. But there's just been so many great things about Pittsburgh for me, and that we can go on about hockey all day, and that was why I retired here. It was the people in the community, and you know, I felt strongly enough about that, you know, I decided to, you know, my kids and everything, and I had great neighbors that you know, this was home and this is where I wanted to be. And obviously with the great hockey memories, I was around for the 1992 Stanley Cup, as well as having the opportunity to play with superstars like Phil Bork and Merrill Lemieux and guys like that. So it's just been wonderful. And just so everybody's aware, too, this upcoming fall hockey season, I believe if we're lucky enough, we all get into it. But that is the 30th anniversary of the first Stanley Cup here in Pittsburgh, if you can imagine that.
I did not realize that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Pittsburgh Penguins alumni, we've tried to do a good job and get organized, be part of the community, but we're starting to get organized this year. We're working with a group, the leadership group, and getting us organized so we can come out and we can help celebrate with the community. There's going to be events that the Penguin alumni are going to be part of. We're going to be working closely with the Pittsburgh Penguin Foundation and 31 Sports Bar and Grill. You know, we're trying to get a little bit of a jump start on that by helping out the community and helping out the Penguin alumni. And again, working with, you know, the local people, local musicians like Donnie Iris, who's very gracious to donate a guitar for us. And we're going to auction that off in the not-too-distant future, hoping to raise some money, both for, like, Scassi San Jose and the community. So
I love it.
There's a lot of good things coming up in the not-too-distant future. And hockey stories, I'd be you guys stop by anytime, and I'll hop in.
I love it.
Tell you a few hockey stories.
Oh, we will hold you to it.
And, you know, we talked about your wings. The poutine was highly rated by Francois Leroux, the few Canadians that came down there, to the hockey players that came down. Your poutine is incredible, according to, like, I like it, but I'm not consider myself an aficionado, but your hockey player buddies love your poutine.
Yeah, that's just, poutine's a staple. For those of you that don't know, that's French fries and gravy with cheese curds on and melted up. And it's you go to McDonald's or any of those fast food places.
It's the best.
They have it right there on the menu as well.
And Dr. Barrett's, we think we just came up with a fundraiser for you. First of all, I'm going to tell everybody that, where they can donate for the fundraiser.
Yeah, so there's really two partners that we have. One is Casa San Jose. You can go to CasaSanJose.org. If you go to their website, when they ask for your personal information, and when you're making the donation, in the second address line, put in Double Play. And our other great partner in this, as I mentioned, is 412 Food Rescue. You can go to 412foodrescue.org. And when you donate there, in the memo, put in Double Play, and that ensures that your donation goes to this effort.
And we are reminding everybody, this is, you're not asking anybody to do anything you didn't do yourself. You put, you started this with your own money. Now, this is the fundraiser we came up with. We think that Ken Reggett should teach Mark Barrett how to play goalie and let people come down and take shots on Dr. Mark Barrett's on the patio at 31 Sports Bar and Grill. For 1 hour, you get $5 to take a shot. What do you think? What do you think, Dr. Barrett? Could we get you to play goalie?
I'd be very happy to teach Dr. Barrett how to play goalie. He'd be a great goalie because it seems like everything he does is very good. And in fact, he's quite the renowned harmonica player as well. So
that's,
he's got a lot of talent and a lot of different directions, that fella.
When the weather's nice, we could go out to Ken's 31 Sports Bar and Grill parking lot, and for $5 or $10, people could take shots at you with your, with Ken's goalie equipment on. What do you think?
Just knowing Ken, nothing is getting past me. Nada. The puck stops here, Ken. You got to give me.
I love that.
You got to give me a couple moves, but dude,
I'll give you
nothing is getting through.
I'll give you a little sneakers. You'll do it. You'll be
That's funny. That's
game
funny.
On, baby.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Only you would say game
on. It has been such a treat to have you guys on. Dr. Barrett, you're doing, not only do you help people on a daily basis, you're helping people with your own. And Ken, same thing. You're pushing the community forward. We love it. So here we go. Now comes the question of the day.
Okay. In honor of this whole 6 degrees of Jagoff separation, and specifically Double Play, if you could have anything as a double, what would it be? If you could say, make that a double, like I got to tell you, it's an easy thing to say, ice cream or maybe even shots. I don't know. What's yours?
Who are you going at right there?
You could go first. Me. I'm saying shots.
right now with all this social distancing, I'll take a double hug.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Mark.
You know what, John and Rachel? I would take a double serving of evenings with the group on this call.
That's
such a good answer.
Right.
We didn't even pay you.
Right,
we didn't even donate for you to say that.
And again, I'm just going to keep throwing it out there that with the Rennebeck kids eating jalapeno honey wings at 31 Sports Bar and Grill and poutine.
Yeah, they'll do it too.
I mean,
not the poutine, because we do go to Niagara Falls every year for two hockey tournaments, and they pass on the poutine.
Ken, that's like going to Permane's and getting no fries on your sandwich. That's ridiculous.
Sorry.
All right, so reminding everybody, Ken, online, where do they find your restaurant?
Yep, 31 Sports Bar and Grill. Check us out on Facebook or social media. We have we support the local music scene, and we have some bands playing off and on. But check out all our specials, our open hours, and everything we're getting involved with on Facebook. And you know, if you're driving by the Pike, call your township. And I'm standing out there, stop in, say hi, and I end up standing outside a lot, just checking the weather out, and I get a few friends from the hockey years, my son playing hockey, stopping by and saying hi, but we'd love to see you, just check us out online, and thank you very much for having me, and way to go, Pittsburgh, we're pulling together great, and keep it up.
Nice.
Awesome
and
ending.
Sometimes you might see some more Penns alumni there, but sometimes you might see Dr. Barrett's there. Dr. Barrett's, where does everybody find about, remind anybody about the Casa San Jose?
Yeah, so again, CasaSanJose.org and 412foodrescue.org. And thanks, everybody, for hanging in there and looking outside of yourself at this really challenging time.
You can't roll like this line.
We have craved a hockey podcast for how long? Because I'm missing it from being that spectator mom, and you're missing it from going to RMU. So what better than to have the hockey dude who worked with none other than Phil Bork, but Josh Yohe.
Right, right. So welcome to the Jagoff podcast, Josh.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Is that your, like, acceptance speech voice?
He read the call and cue cards perfectly,
yeah,
right
he's
there.
Like, act
it's a pleasure
right.
to be there. Name, insert
I'm
name.
I'm very well trained.
This is fantastic because, you know, we've been wanting to have you on the podcast since the book came out that you did with Phil. But then in the meantime, you've done some other things and, you know, including the article about Kenny Raggett, you know, so it's crazy. But if you don't mind, if we could back up for a second here, you are a hockey writer and, I want to know, were you a hockey player that became a hockey writer? Were you a food writer that became a hockey writer? How did hockey writing get into your portfolio?
You know, when I was a kid, I always really loved sports, and I wasn't a good enough athlete to be a professional athlete because, you know, few among us are. And I wasn't really the greatest student. I went to Peters Township High School in the South Hills, and it occurred to me that the one strength that I had in school was writing. So I actually had an English teacher in high school say, you know, Josh, you're so obsessed with sports, and you're a really good writer. Maybe you should go into the journalism field. I said, well, that's not the worst idea, I suppose. you know, when you're 15, 16, you don't know what you want to do with your life. But, you know, so I thought, and I always loved hockey. Growing up in the 80s and 90s, you know, watching Mario Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr, you couldn't help if you were a sports fan but be, you know, attracted to that team. And so one thing kind of led to another, and that's kind of how I ended up here.
Well, that's the perfect segue to my next question because, you know, the face of journalism has just changed. And we have this conversation so often with the journalists that we've had on, specifically yours and my favorite person, Rob Rossi. But what is it like now? You know, we went from having those niche departments that were in, you know, news sources, whether it was newspaper, whether it's TV, radio. Did you ever foresee that sports would be a big enough bang to actually hold its own with something like The Athletic?
Oh, boy. 10 or 15 years ago, probably not.
Sure.
It's changed so radically in the last decade. I mean, we always knew that the Internet was coming and that it was going to be around a lot longer than print journalism, probably.
Sure.
And, you know, and that's unfortunate. I love newspapers. I certainly wish them nothing but success, but we've seen that, especially in the last decade, that, you know, from a financial standpoint, the Internet works a lot better, let's be honest. But I'm not shocked. You know, in some areas, sports are just so important, so ingrained to our community, and Pittsburgh, obviously, is one of those places. What else are you going to do on a Sunday afternoon in Pittsburgh when there's a Steeler game on? It's not like in other cities. There's a reason TV ratings aren't as good in places like Los Angeles
that's
or
true.
Miami. When you can go to the beach on a Sunday afternoon. Well, that's not what we do here. We talk about sports.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't see it coming necessarily, but with The Athletic success, I used to work with Dejan Kovacevic at DKPittsburghSports.com, and honestly, he was one of the pioneers in all of this.
Indeed.
He kind of took the chance and bet on himself, and you know, we have kind of a weird relationship. I left there a couple of years ago. Not necessarily the easiest person to work for, we'll say. But, I mean, it was a brilliant idea. It was. And you've certainly seen The Athletic and others follow suit, and it's worked.
And, you know, Josh, the weird thing is that everybody tells us when you look at Facebook and the Internet, don't do long videos, do short posts, do short blog posts, blah, 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 blah. People's
attention span
are so, you know, getting shorter and shorter. In the meantime, what you do at The Athletic is completely opposite of that, and you're having success.
It's so true. And we talked to Rob about that, too. Yeah. Talk to us about why you think that. I mean, and we have to say we are huge fans of The Athletic, and we love the fact you know, that there are stories like that. So go ahead. You tell us.
Oh, no, I appreciate that. It's very funny you bring that up. I was on the phone with the aforementioned Rob Rossi just a couple of days ago, and I said, remember when we worked at the Trib, and every article we would write, we would get yelled at that it was too long. can't be more than 600 words at the Athletic. They're like, we don't care how long you write. We don't want some 3-paragraph article. We want something that, you know, people can really dig their teeth into. It's completely different than anything I've ever been a part of. It works, and I'm not patting myself on the back at all. I'm a very, very small part of the equation, but I will tell you that both in Pittsburgh and in general with the Athletic around the world now, we have just developed such of a talented staff. And you can't just have anybody throw together 5,000 words and want to read it. You have to have some of the best writers in the world.
I really
think we've developed that at the Athletic. I mean that sincerely. We have some really great writers, and they just give us the freedom and the flexibility to do our own thing and to not have any restrictions. And I think people identify that, and I think they like it. And so far, so good. It's definitely worked.
And that's one of the things. The metrics show it, right? I mean, there's no making it up. Like, how many people picked up this newspaper at the doctor's office and read my article, you know, because it's the same newspaper. You know how many people read your article.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, the numbers are off the charts. And also, you know, I mentioned the flexibility. Newspapers, listen, I worked for a newspaper for years, so I know what it's like. You always have space to fill. And I really do not envy people in the newspaper industry right now.
Right.
But there's not really any sports news. It's
right.
almost impossible mm-hmm. to fill that space. So with us, and especially like when we see the metrics, like Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, especially Friday and Saturday, nobody's online. Nobody reads.
Right.
I could write the greatest article I've ever written. If I publish it on a Friday night, half the people will read it that would normally read it.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
You know, so we publish most of our stuff Monday through Thursday. Not all. If the Penguins play on Saturday in St. Louis on a Saturday, I'll be there. But, you know, that's when we try to put our big stuff out there. It's just a bigger audience. And we have found that people are attracted to quality. And if you write something good, if you really take time and put the research in and put your heart into it and you know, you do all those things. Guess what? People are going to want to read it. They'll pay to read it. They will come back for more. It's just, it's really one of the advantages we have. We don't have to fill up 500 words of space just for, you know, for the sake of filling in space.
And you said two things that kind of resonated with me. One being quality, obviously, because it's not just those old news days where you're just throwing out, how would this work? Or, you know, X did this story, so we're just going to kind of do a spin on it, you know, number one. And number two, the word restriction. So true. There was a time that there were so many restrictions on what you could say or pay for play or, well, wait a minute, this is taboo. Is not having as many restrictions there a little bit easier for you to be an even better writer?
Yes, absolutely it is. And, you know, for one thing, we're allowed to use expletives, which I try not to take advantage of too much. But if you get a colorful quote, like, so we don't just drop F-bombs in our articles for the heck of it.
Right.
If you get a particular person says that was the worst effing call I've ever seen in my life, yeah, we're going to use it, and people love that. So, you know, that's something I'm not used to, especially when I worked at the Trib. And the Trib, like, lived in constant fear of being sued no matter what I wrote. And I'd be in trouble all the time. I was always getting called to the principal's office, like, why did you write this, Josh? I'm like, oh, God. Like, sorry. I mean, it was... Well, you know, I mean, that's the way newspapers often are.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to worry about that anymore. I mean, I still have to be careful what I write from an ethical standpoint, of course.
Right.
But no, they don't handcuff us. They say, hey, we hired you for a reason. We think you're good. Go do your thing.
Well, and you know, awesome. we live in that same world, not nearly as big as yours, but because when at one point, the Post-Gazette had said you're not allowed to use the word Jagoff in the Post-Gazette anywhere because they had quoted someone saying the word Jagoff. You know, hey, where's my French fries, you Jagoff? And so the Dave Shribman said, okay, not allowed to use the word Jagoff in the Post-Gazette. So on our blog at Jagoff.com, we said we're not allowed to use the word Post-Gazette anymore. That's what we did. So,
let me I have to tell you a quick story. I apologize for interrupting.
No, you're fine.
A few years ago, the Penguins played the Flyers in the playoffs, and that was it was 2012 when Jaromir Jagr had signed with Philadelphia. And there's a big Jagr jersey in the Carson City Saloon on the south side, and somebody had taken the words OFF, the letters OFF, and taped it on his jersey, so it said Jagoff.
Yeah.
And I took a picture of it and tweeted it, And I got called to the principal's office.
Oh my God. That's funny.
This is a family newspaper.
Oh my God.
Josh, really? I have to ask you.
Can't you say Jagoff?
Was it Kevin Smith? Was it Kevin?
No, it wasn't. It was somebody above Kevin.
Oh.
Kevin wouldn't have really cared.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have really cared, but he wouldn't have like necessarily jumped in. He was kind of a conflict avoider as a boss.
So we talked about the long form articles, but you went into longer form now. If These Walls Could Talk, a book by you and Phil Bork, right? Now, we want to talk about the book and some of your favorite stories. It might be like asking your favorite kid, but first of all, how does that even happen? Do you guys, are you sitting around having a beer and some poutine and go, hey, we should do a book?
Who says poutine? That's funny.
Well, I'll tell you how it started. Phil was actually initially going to write the book with Rob Rossi. And for those who don't know Rob, listen, Rob's the greatest, but Rob sometimes takes his time with certain projects.
Yes.
And he's been working on an Evgeny Malkin book for a decade, literally. I thought it was going to be done in 2012. It's still happening. So just like, I can't do this. I don't have time for this. Because Phil wanted to get it done right away. So like about a year passed, and Phil called me. He said, you know, I still want to do this damn book. I just do. And the publishing company had reached out to him. And I said, Phil, like, I'd be happy to do this. Like, Phil Bork stories in a book? My God. Like, I can't even, you know, I can't even imagine that this, that we need to do this. And about a year later, it was done. So it was, honestly, it was the most fun I've ever had with the project. We would just go out to a bar or a restaurant, have dinner, and I would just turn my recorder on and I would say, Phil, talk. And we would just go year by year. He would tell me all these different stories and I would kind of narrow it down and put it into book form, and away we went.
How hard was that to actually narrow it down? I mean, like you said, to sit and listen to those kind of stories, how do you know what not to keep?
You know, that was really hard because I had to try to put myself in a reader's shoes. Like, I have certain interests that might be more profound than what other people might find interesting. Just, you know, given my age and who I grew up watching play, that kind of thing. So it was not easy at all, actually. And Phil is a wealth of stories that, my gosh, I've had so many people tell me, God, I feel like I was just sitting with you and Borky, you know, reading this book when I got it in the mail or whatever. Like, it's, you know, it's very much a storytelling book. And so, yeah, it did take some time to narrow it down. And also, I mean, it's not for children. There's some adult content in this book. And in all seriousness, we had to make sure not to do any damage to any marriages or anything.
Yeah.
Because you can imagine, like, professional athletes in the 80s and 90s especially, I'm not saying they don't have their fun now, but it was a little, you know, pre-internet, it was a little different.
Well, look at the look at the Jordan story that's out there right now. Look how many people are getting burned by that. You know, the cocaine use and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, back then it was pretty much anything goes on the road. And trust me, I've heard all the stories, and I'd have this big smile on my face, like, "Oh, this is great." And then Phil would look at me and say, "Yeah, we can't do that. That's going to be a divorce." Like,
yeah, you're right. That was code word.
We had to be very delicate, but I still think there are plenty of entertaining stories. And I said to Phil, I said, listen, if the book sales bomb, like, we could tell people, look, for a price, we will tell you additional stories, come meet us at this location, and we'll go from there. But it was it was so much fun, though. It really was.
It's so amazing to hear that you have in your voice, right? It's one of those things where you could talk about how great something was or the enjoyment you got out of something, but you can truly hear, you know, in your voice. What is the biggest difference, though, from going from writing these long form columns or stories or, you know, advertorials to writing a book? Had you ever written one before, or what was that transition like?
No, for first time writing a book, I had no idea what to expect. And the transition, you know, when you're writing an article, even if it's a long form article, it's still going to take you 15 minutes to read. It's not that long.
Sure.
So, you know, with a book, I find it, you know, like running a marathon a little bit, and God knows I've never done that, but it's like, you have to pace yourself. Sure. I mean, you do have to put some background in. You can't just throw all your zingers out there in the first five pages.
Right.
Or someone's going to want to read the rest of the book. So, luckily, because of Phil, I had some wonderful stories to put together in that book. But it it did take me time, and also it is a lot of work. I will tell you to put, I think it's 270 pages or something like that. It's time consuming because I actually wrote that during last season, really from about October till April. And now, granted, that is 6 months, but that's also during the hockey season when I'm busy.
Sure.
I kind of have the school teacher schedule. If you need me between, June and September, whatever you need, I'm around. I got nothing better to do because it's not hockey season, but during the season, it is a busy time for me. So I had to, schedule my life a little bit and leave myself an hour a night or whatever to work on the book. And I'm not very good at scheduling my life. So that was an achievement for me, but I managed to get it done, thank God.
That's awesome. And certainly you did get it done and done well.
Yeah. All right. So we know we have a limited amount of time with you, and so we have to go to the rapid fire. But we also have our question of the day.
Right.
But our question of the day is what ties everybody together. But rapid fire first. My first rapid fire question is maybe not as quick. You know a lot about hockey from writing it. You've watched it. You've learned it. You know how to analyze it. Would you rather be a writer or a coach?
I'd like the coach's pay scale better, but I'd probably prefer being a writer. Being a coach, listen, coaching millionaires, most of them are really good guys, but they still have egos. So that's not an easy job, really.
Sure. Yeah, we've heard that before. All right, this is an easy one. What is your go-to snack for any game?
Ooh, my go-to snack for any game. Rob Rossi brings Reese's Pieces into the press box. And we typically eat them during the game.
Okay.
So that's my go-to snack because the food in the press box is pretty gross.
Yeah. That's so funny.
We have our Reese's Pieces, and we there's usually wrappers all over the place by the end of the game.
That's a good choice.
Wait, that little pregame dinner you guys get or after when you're watching the coach, is it the food's not so great there?
Oh, no, the pregame dinner food's good, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, Regina's Bistro is legit.
Okay.
But the little snacks in the press box, the pretzels tend to be somewhat stale.
Okay. All right. Any sport all-time MVP? Your all-time MVP of any sport?
Who's the all-time MVP of any sport?
Any sport.
Probably Babe Ruth, because I think, a century later, he still might be the most famous athlete in history. Right there with Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, probably Muhammad Ali. You could pick any of them, but to be that famous a century later, that speaks volumes to me.
And there's a guy you really wish there would have been smartphones around when he was around.
Isn't that the truth?
He'd have been.
I would have written a book with him, let me tell you.
So if we're not talking about sports, what's the next best subject? What would we be talking about?
Oh, boy. I like history a lot.
Okay.
I enjoy World War I and World War II documentaries. So much of my life is based around sports.
Sure.
That when I get home from work, I often don't watch hockey unless the Penguins, if I'm in a game, obviously I am. But on the off nights, I kind of like to get away from it. So I enjoy history documentaries and really stupid movies from the 80s and 90s.
Oh.
And those are kind of my go-to.
That's a good one, too. Good answer, Josh.
So, we also know this, you're a music fan of the 90s, so favorite song from the 90s, pick one.
My favorite song from the 90s?
Yeah.
I enjoy a British melancholy rock.
Okay.
I pick a Bittersweet Symphony by the Byrds.
Oh, such a good song! That is a really good song. Oh, my
God. And
gosh.
Tanner's trying to sing it right now.
Yeah, my dog, sorry about that.
Right, in fact, my lady friend likes to tell me because I have a Scorpio moon that it's fitting that I would like a depressing song like that. I want to throw some astrology into this.
Well, there you go.
That's funny.
Whatever, right? Whatever
oh,
the reason.
That's funny.
To throw that in there.
All right. Would you ever wear a sports jersey to any event at all?
Have I ever worn one or would I ever?
Have you ever? Or actually, you could go. I'll let you go either way.
Is it taboo?
Is it taboo, right?
I will say this is kind of weird. We don't have basketball in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So for some reason, I grew up a Sacramento Kings fan. And so I have on occasion gone to Sacramento and and worn the Vlade Divac or Chris Webber jersey to basketball games. So indeed I have.
Okay. All right. All right. Gotcha. All right. This brings us to the question of the day. This is where you look out. You could get fried on this question.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. Okay. So we're kind of calling this in honor of 6 degrees of separation on the Ajaga podcast, because it goes like, I know John, I'm a hockey mom. John loves hockey. John loves reading you with hockey. You worked with Ken Reggett. Ken Reggett was with Dr. Barrett's. Dr. Barrett's knows our music guest, and there's our 6 degrees. So if you actually could have anything as a double, as in double play that obviously Ken Reggett's involved in, what would it be? If you could have a double of anything, it could be a shot, it could be ice cream, it could be anything. What would it be?
Oh my gosh.
I know, we're tough.
Yeah, I love your questions, because
yay!
I'm so used to having people say, when's hockey going to come back?
Right, exactly, right?
Soon I hope, but I don't think. It's funny that you bring up ice cream. I definitely have an ice cream weakness.
Okay.
In particular, chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream.
Oh my gosh,
Josh. I've always found to have a particular weakness for that.
Mm.
That's a good one.
That's the first thing that came to mind.
Okay.
Major ice cream issues with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've been on a diet during the quarantine, so I've lost a bunch of weight and I haven't eaten ice cream in like 2 months, and it's really killing me.
There's
a Wendy's across the street from where I live, and I think of the Frosty like every day.
I love Frosties. That's another good one.
Yeah. You know what? Before we give you, we have to tell everybody where to find you. One thing we forgot to do was ask you, what's your favorite? We know the favorite story out of the book has to be that the Pens broke the Stanley Cup, verifying that happened, and Phil Bork is, you know, implicated in all. But what is your favorite story coming out of that book?
My favorite story comes from, I think it was 1994. Phil and his wife were kind of separated, I guess, by that point, and he was traded to Ottawa. And his wife hired a private investigator to follow him for a week. And he was at a strip club every night, but he wasn't really misbehaving in the strip club. He was just sitting there having a drink and then going home. So the private investigator wrote up his report, and instead of mailing it to Phil's soon-to-be ex-wife, he accidentally mailed it to Phil instead.
So
Phil's wife's private investigator sends his report to Phil. So Phil calls her, and he says, hey, just want to let you know your investigator that you hired sent the thing to my address.
Oh.
I'm sure it's an innocent mistake. Don't worry, I'm going to mail it to you now.
That is crazy.
I was giggling uncontrollably when he told me
sure.
that story. I'm like, oh,
jeez.
Come on.
Oh,
my God. That's funny. Josh Yohe.
How good is that?
That is fantastic. And thank you so much for doing this today. We really appreciate it. We need to bring you, when we're back going out to places, we need to bring you out with us for sure. But tell everybody where they find you.
It would be my pleasure.
Where does everybody find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me at Twitter. That's seems to be where most people find me these days, I guess. Josh Yohe _PGH is my Twitter name. And just go to theathletic.com. You can find me there as well. We got some good deals too. You can get it for, I think, 20 or 30 bucks a year right now. And if you like sports and good writing at all, I promise you, you'll like it.
And yeah, we do. This isn't just because you're here. We do recommend it. I subscribed to it one of the first times we ever interviewed Rob. And it is amazing, and finding time to read it all is because so many good things come up there. So, Josh Yohe, Pittsburgh Athletic, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Definitely appreciate it.
Oh, any time is my pleasure, and stay safe, and hopefully do it first.
Come on, Rach, do it.
Because my kids were, listen, as they were texting me from the live the other day, they were like, this guy is sick. Yeah. And then they're like, Mom, stop doing that thing because you don't sound good at all. So
this
I'm
does
not
sound
do
like a bass. It sounds like passing gas. But
yeah, but he makes it sound like an art.
Right. Yes. So.
Not a.
Nicely done. Yeah.
Small transition.
So who we have on the line is someone that we became infatuated with last year at the Three Rivers Arts Festival, and was supposed to come home to Pittsburgh from New York, New Jersey area for this again. Of course, it's canceled, but just had them on our Facebook Live, which, by the way, you can go watch it as in a rerun because it's out there on Facebook. This is Neil Meadows, Napalm, N-A-P-O-M, beatboxer, world-renowned beatboxer right
here.
Love
that word.
I know, right? No, it's amazing. Like, you don't realize the magnitude of what he is.
Yeah. I had a couple of Roman's friends who, like, messaged through my friends, and they were like, does Rachel know that, like, he's the best in the world? And I was like, yes, I know that fun fact. So, listen, we've just really taken a liking to what you do because it is, like, that's a great word. We're infatuated by it because, as you've told us before, Neil, it's not something, it's more of a cultural thing, right? This whole beatboxing. Not everybody understands it. But talk a little bit about, like, how do you get into it and how does it become the next goal? Like, how do you set those goals through beatboxing? Like, okay, I'm going to try this, but here's where I want to get, because it becomes more than just a cultural thing.
How's it going, guys? This is Neil Napalm. Great question to start off with.
You son of a gun. Neil, do you know the rules at this thing? There, every week there's a thing where we keep tallies of how many people say, hey, Rach, good question. John, good question.
And I
you
win.
We're at the end of the podcast and she's up 1-0 right now. So go ahead, answer your question. But I'm angry. I'm angry.
Let's see. Well, I personally started beatboxing. I was into guitar whenever I first started, so I was already, like, a little bit into music, into playing music. Mm-hmm. And I just saw somebody beatboxing on the flute on YouTube. He was playing the flute and beatboxing the Super Mario Brothers scene. I thought that was crazy.
That's so cool.
So I kept looking into him, just, you know, like, researching more of his music. And then through that, I ended up finding beatbox battles in Germany. And some of the first ones I saw were, like, two German guys in 2005. I don't even understand the language that they're speaking, but whenever they're beatboxing, they're doing the craziest sounds, like Darth Vader beatbox. It was crazy. And I just kept looking into it. And I found out that there's, like, a whole culture for it all around the world. There's people in China, people in South America just doing, like, beatbox battles. I mean, it's a part of hip-hop, and hip-hop is all around the world, too.
True.
But beatboxing kind of has its own thing.
Yeah.
It's not really too much with the hip-hop community. But as I was finding these out, I was practicing, like, learning a bunch of new sounds, because through watching it, I just kind of, like, naturally picked up on some of the basic stuff. And, like, every time I heard somebody that did something crazy or something new, I always wanted to learn it. And then, like, in the middle of that, I was looking up these Facebook groups, and they would post, like, when beatbox battles are happening, when certain events were happening. So my first event was in Youngstown, Ohio in 2012, called the Midwest Beatbox Battle. And it was also the first Midwest battle that happened. And I went to that, if it was 2012, I think I was like 15 or 16 years old. And my mom, my sister, one of my friends, and a couple other friends came with me. And I won my first two battles and then lost the third one. I went back to the same thing the next year and then lost my first one. And then I think after that like year break in between, after that, I was like really grinding and trying to do every battle possible, every open mic possible, every opportunity that I can get to just beatbox in front of people and practice and show people my art.
Because it was one of those things where you kind of got a taste of it, right? And thought, I have to, it's like a hunger. You had to keep doing it.
Definitely.
Okay.
So when you say you won or lost, what does mean?
Yeah. Or how is it determined?
Yeah, exactly. You know, what does that mean? Is it the speed? Is it the clarity? Is it the ability to keep a beat? Or is it really you can fire up a crowd?
Yeah, it's a mixture of everything. But whenever you see it live, it's a lot simpler than you think it would be. Unless if they're like really, really close, like, usually it's about who's more entertaining.
Okay.
And what makes it entertaining in front of beatboxers is, you know, speed, because beatboxers like, you know, skills and stuff. They like speed and low bass and stuff like that.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, what it really is just entertainment. You know, who's putting on a better show? And in a battle, like, you can put on, like, a battle type of show, or there's some beatboxers that use their time and really just put on a performance. Like they perform their songs and they're like complete artists about it. And both strategies work for people.
So you mentioned this as far as the bass, the low bass. People like the low bass. Now, when we get into certain sounds, is low bass, do they like it because it, we all like that, you know, when we're listening, or we like the feeling in our chest, or do they like it because it's a tough accomplishment to execute?
The mixture of both. I think that's a great question.
Dude, thank you very much. All right, we're friends on Facebook again. I'll send you a friend request.
Yeah, I think like a part of the reason why I became so popular was because the bass sound that I made, I was one of the first people that did it like that. So it was a mixture of both. Like it was, wow. It's a clean sound that to listen to, it's good. And also not a lot of people are doing it. So it has that surprise factor. But once it gets in, once you like start listening to beatboxing and like understanding kind of the lingo of it, you see a lot of like the same sounds being used. So it's not really about the surprise element too much anymore.
But are they sounds that you're noticing, like you within your group, or do you think that the general public recognizes it? I mean, and I say, because to be honest, what, you know, from the first time to now hearing you, there are certain things that I go, oh, that is a similar sound, but I don't know that I would notice it as much as you would. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There, I mean, it's another language.
Yeah.
It's really like, it's with different characters and everything. It's a whole other ball game, because the way that the sounds connect and just the way that I go about thinking about it is crazy. Kind of a madman.
What is that? What's your favorite sound to make or create? Because I don't want to say make. Like, what do you go, you know what? I have this go-to sound and I'm noticing it throughout the different melodies I lay out.
The most popular one I do is my lip rolls, and that's like,
I love it.
I don't know if that would be my favorite.
Okay.
My favorite thing to do is to do like multi layers of things. So you have like your percussive sounds that you make with your lips and your tongue. And so my favorite thing to do is to have like one layer of percussive sounds and another layer of voice and have them happening at the same time. So for example, I'll be humming something. And I use percussive sounds that aren't breathing, so it's
it's amazing.
I like to do a lot of different like layers of things, like different polyrhythms, like one rhythm with my throat and then another rhythm with my lips.
That is amazing. Is that how you get dates? I have to ask you.
That's a good question there.
Right? Like, are you like, look what I can do? And you're like, hook, line, and sinker.
Not really.
Okay. I'm glad you asked that.
I had to know. Oh my God. That's pretty cool.
And again, you sit there and think, you know, we know when we interview comedians, they say, you know, we hate it when people come up and say, hey, I got this joke you can do. Do you get people like nerds like us that go, hey, Neil, can you, you know, when you're like, please go away, go buy yourself a drink and go away.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so bad. I think the worst thing is, and it's not, I'm not saying it's bad, but the worst case of that is a couple of my beats, like in countries like Indonesia, are very, very popular. And beatboxing is like, that's a whole other subject. Like beatboxing in third world countries and like lower income countries is huge. It's like,
really?
Yeah. In Indonesia, it's actually like, it's on the news and stuff almost every day. It's very big.
How about that?
Is that because it's a simple way to live? You don't need technology and things to do that. Is that why?
Or instruments.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So a couple of my songs there are pretty big, and people message me asking for the same song every single day.
I see.
But that's the only case where
that's such a claim to really fame, though. I love it. I love it. So if we were talking music, though, and I was going to ask you this the other night, if we're talking music, who have been influences? And I know you've talked about like Dougie Fresh and things like that from a beatbox standpoint. But what about from the hip hop world or from, you know, a general music pop culture kind of standpoint? Who was your like, I want to emulate this person, but I'm going to do it this style?
Well, the straight up like beatbox sounds and all of that came from beatboxers.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, I mean, I grew up in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. I wasn't listening to hip hop music whenever I was growing up. So it was a lot of rock music and Metallica, stuff like that.
Hmm.
Whenever I like got into beatboxing, that kind of opened me up to the whole culture of hip hop, breakdancing and all these rappers and crazy stuff. And then electronic music is also a big influence because
a
lot of just straight up beats that you can kind of emulate.
Sure.
Well,
a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
All right. So how does this thing go? Mom, I'm moving to New York and New Jersey to beatbox.
Your family was supportive, right?
They were supportive, but just curious is that when you're making that big leap, that's a big leap to go do that. How does that conversation go?
Yeah, it was a transition. Whenever I first started, I would like take the megabus or a train from Pittsburgh to New York for like a week or something. If we knew that we had a show that weekend, I would go for a week. And then like over the course of a couple months, it ended up being 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. And then eventually we ended up getting our own apartment and it all kind of just transitioned into.
Okay.
We lived in a place called the Beatbox House and that was our crew.
That's awesome.
So cool. So cool. Well, listen, we cannot thank you enough for giving us all this time. And we are going to find a way of bringing you back here so that more people can enjoy you even more since this is your hometown.
Yeah, we have to do that.
Yeah,
I mean,
we have to.
And, you know, again, we apologize if we sound amazed and infatuated with you, but we love it. Yeah. And we love the artistry for sure. So here comes the question of the day.
It's a big one. Okay. We asked every one of our guests get this. So in honor of this whole 6 degrees of Jagoff that we're talking about, where John and I know each other, we love hockey. We have Ken Brigget and Dr. Barrett's who, you know, are a part of Double Play and Josh Yohe, who is the reporter of all things hockey, of course, is intertwined there also, but the Double Play is the reason that we had you on the Jagoff Live special. So you're our music guest. In honor of that whole scenario, if you could have anything as a double, what would it be? If you could say, make that a double, it could be anything. What's your choice of a double?
Double time.
Oh.
Double life.
Wow.
That's a really
great one.
Wow. Like the doctor was saying hugs and things like that, which is, you know, super sweet, but I like yours. That's a good one.
That's
awesome.
Awesome.
Before we let you go, tell everybody once again, where can they find you and follow you and know all the good stuff you're doing?
To follow me and my crew, my crew's name is The Beatbox House. If you can remember The Beatbox House, that is everywhere on Facebook, Instagram, anywhere that you look. For my stuff personally, you can find me at Napom, N-A-P-O-M. If you search that on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube,
anywhere.
Spotify, Apple Music, I will be the first one to come up. So please check me out.
Love it.
Absolutely.
Love it.
And, you know, you're one of these artists that are not working. So if anybody can contribute to the cause, we like that
check
too.
Check you out. Yep. Yeah. So that was the Jagoff podcast. Love. Listen, did you remember the other day Larry from Honda said, your last few podcasts have been so good. And we were like, it's because we trap people. But it's so true.
Right.
They've been so interesting to really be able to talk to people, you know, and we love being out and about, but this is really allowing us to get more intimate. So thanks to all of our guests for the last couple weeks.
Yeah, we have to thank today Ken Rigget, Stanley Cup goalie from the Pittsburgh Penguins, who now owns 31 Sports Bar and Grill in the Bridgeville area. Have to go there, as I said, for the poutine and wings.
And his partner and our partner, Dr. Barrett's, phenomenal doctor and phenomenal person, philanthropist. He is in charge of Double Play. He's asking that you donate to Casa San Jose. Double Play is that you are supporting local restaurants, keeping them afloat during the pandemic. They are helping Casa San Jose help people in the community.
Yeah. And if you fast forwarded in this podcast past Josh Yohe, You missed a really good story about Phil Bork out of the book.
A couple
If
good
These
stories,
Walls Could
really?
Talk.
Yeah. That was such a great interview. I love
So thanks to Josh Yohe for making time for that. And he's agreed to come on to us when we go back out on our porch.
Yeah. That's the way we roll. And then Napalm. I mean, we're becoming really tight with this guy. I don't know what to tell you. I am really climbing high on the mom scale with my kids because he's dope.
Yeah, he is. He literally is dope, and we are not. And, of course, thank you once again. A special thank you to Roman Rennebeck, who was our chief statistician over the last week on the blog.
100%. When the answers are 0% financing, a test drive that is brought to you, and hundreds of makes and models in stock, the only question is, what are you waiting for?
Right. Rorick Honda is back in business with their parts and service department, and one of their trusted sales representatives are able to assist you all online for that perfect new or used vehicle. Visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs.
Yeah.